Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We we're talking about electric cars in the I guess it's the incomparable Slack, which is a silly,
crossing some streams,
silly
there.
Place for it because it's that's about podcasts. It's the other one is
it's
Six
a community
Colors
of people.
I know.
Who have many interests, many of which are technology related.
I thought it was interesting. The Super Bowl, for those who don't know, a superb owl.
Yes.
As that. By the way, watch the Super Bowl episode of What We Do in the Shadows if you haven't. It is amazing. Anyway, lots of electric car ads. Not all. Most ads were up for electric cars. And there was a good story on, I want to say, The Verge, but it might not have been. That
was, I read this.
You can't buy almost any of the electric cars that are for sale because what they're doing, this is, and that story is good because it links to a study of people's perception of availability of electric cars. And it's basically like, do you know if this company is making an electric car? And the answer is people don't know that companies are making electric cars. People don't know. Like there are the, and I find this every time I walk through my neighborhood, I think about the playing the Who Has an Electric Car game, and I realized that unless it's a Tesla or a very obvious electric car like a Chevy Bolt or a Nissan Leaf, you can't. There are enough now that you kind of can't tell. A lot of the luxury brands sort of like they don't put big lightning bolts on it, right?
Here's a question for you. I don't know about California. In Massachusetts, EVs have different plates.
Oh, that's not true in California.
Interesting. Okay.
You can get a sticker, but you have to sign up for it. And then you get a little sticker in a special color that you put on that gets you in the carpool lane.
Yeah, and I don't know if the EV plates are mandated for electric vehicles or you can get them. I think it may be that you can choose to get them.
That's cool. Well,
there's no fee.
So my point is that with the Super Bowl, the car makers are playing stage one of this game where it's like, did you know we make one? No, you can't buy one yet, but you will be able to. In fact, the only one that that you can buy, I think, of all of them that they said was the Polestar, which is from Audi, I think, which
that's
I didn't know.
Volvo. It's
okay.
A sub-Volvo.
But it's like,
brand,
again, it's a brand, so they're not even using their brand on it, but they do have it. It's not a fly-by-night like startup. It's Volvo. But most of them you can't buy yet. But the point is that they're sort of like cranking up the engine for this stuff. And I think it's really interesting because you know, the conversation in the incomparable Slack. Sorry, Six Colors members, you don't get to see that conversation. Start your own in the Six Colors Slack. We'll talk about it there too.
There's some overlap of people.
There's a lot of overlap there. So the conversation there was it's a lot of the conversation around EVs. It's like charging issues, and if you don't have a your own garage or driveway to charge in, where do you charge? And I mentioned that I have a friend who has a Tesla, and that person has to charge it, and they live in an apartment, and they have to charge it at a charger near their workplace because they can't charge in their garage where they have a parking spot because they have this apartment, and yet the landlord or whatever will be like, no, we're not putting electricity in our garage for charging. It's dumb. It's really dumb. But it's all like I there's a guy I follow on Twitter, Remez Nam, who's a science fiction writer. You have met him, I think.
Share a publisher.
Share a publisher. So Remez, smart guy, writes a lot about renewable energy and about fighting climate change, and he's actually a super optimistic person who he's a great follow about this stuff. He's really super smart, retweets a lot of really great stuff, and he pointed out that it's probably 2019 was peak internal combustion engine, and that at this point there will never be more internal combustion engine cars sold in a year than were sold like 3 years ago. It's going to go down as electric goes up, but that there are all of these issues, and the one that I kept mentioning in there's the charging issue, and then there's the like range issue, which I mentioned in the Slack, which is another thing, which is that Tesla has, because they spent so much money on their supercharger network, Tesla's got like, my guess is like a 5 or 10 year lead, even with the US government investing in charging infrastructure. Their supercharger network is so built out because they were ahead of the game that right now, if you're buying a car, an electric car with the prospect of driving long distances, you want to be able to take that trip that's going to require a charging stop or two. Right now, the Tesla experience can't be beat, in the U.S. at least. Mm-hmm. But they're working on it. But I find it fascinating that for all of Tesla, and really, we got to give them credit, Tesla kind of jump-started the entire EV market, I think, in the U.S. and really and have the majority of the EV market in the U.S. By the way, it's bananas. Their market share is going to fall dramatically because other car makers are going to do it anyway. But they their charging infrastructure really is just way ahead right now.
Well, they made a play to do it in the way that a lot of other manufacturers, because they were slow out of the gate with the cars, also aren't.
Exactly.
It's not something they're used to doing, right? It's not like the car manufacturers are like, we built a chain of gas stations, right?
I mean,
they're
that
not
probably,
used to that.
I mean, they probably were involved in building out gas station infrastructure way
50, 60 years
back
ago
in the day.
Or something, yeah.
But now, and so I, as a tech person, I'm fascinated by that aspect of it, which I know is like esoteric in the extreme, but like the fact that Tesla is just building infrastructure for their cars, whereas in the U.S. anyway, there are a bunch of different networks that are kind of independent, and Electrify America is the one that's really kind of coming on. They're funded in part by Volkswagen from the Dieselgate mm-hmm. scandal settlement. And I think there's, in the infrastructure bill that got passed by Congress and signed into law, there's money for charging infrastructure, although it sounds like most of that is going to be level two charging, which is good, because that's the kind of thing where if you don't have a charger at home, when you go to the store, you plug in and your car charges while you're shopping, and then you don't ever need to have that charger at home. It's actually an important part of the ecosystem, too. But the long-range charging, it's fascinating, because like Electrify America, when I borrowed a Tesla last year and drove it around, what struck me was that the you go to a supercharger and there's 8 or 12 or 20 charging ports.
Right.
And you go to, you look at the Electrify America one and there are two. It's like,
this is a challenge, right? Because we're at that point, we're at like almost a chicken and egg problem where it's like, well, I want to buy an electric car, but there's not enough charging. But it's like, well, no, but if the more people buy cars, the more chargers they will build, right? And like, you're stuck with that situation of like, yeah, I mean, I'll buy an electric car, but then what's the lag time between, well, more and more people have electric cars, but now we're overloading like the available chargers.
And range anxiety it's true, like because we have a car that only goes, I mean, I could charitably say 40 miles of range, but like it really has almost no range. But we drive it most of the time because we don't drive very far. Most people don't drive very far. The challenge is if you're going to spend money in a car and you do sometimes go longer distances, the last thing you want to do is spend money in a car that you can't take on the longer distances, and then you have to rent a minivan or whatever you need to do. It's like, I don't want to do that. So that's part of the challenge. There are plug-in hybrids out there now. I don't really ever want to buy a gas car again, but the nice thing about plug-in hybrids is when you're driving around, depends on how they're engineered, because some of them will use the gas to assist, and that's kind of cheating. But the dream is you only ever use it for range, and so you never fill it up. Squeegee, as the ad says. For people who watch ads in the U.S., there's an ad about that. The entire point of the plug-in hybrid is to qualify you for squeegeeing at a gas station, because you can put in a squeeze of gas. And I can't do that in my Leaf. It would just splash everywhere and short things out. Mm-hmm, so,
I think it's interesting. We are really at this inflection point, and it's going to be painful, I think, during this process, which is going to take a few years, right? I mean, to the point where we have all these car companies who have committed to it. We have governments pushing for transitions. Like, all this stuff is happening. But this period over the next, 10 years or so, like, as this happens, it is going to be a bit like fits and starts. It's going to be patchwork.
Yeah.
There's not going to be enough chargers. They're going to build more chargers. Well, there's not going to be enough cars available. They're going to build more cars. Like, it's going to happen.
I'm fascinated by it. And I'm fascinated by, right, because we got a front row seat for this. Like, this is one of those things that these huge transitions that only happen so often, and you don't quite know how it's going to go. And like, I find that fascinating. I do wonder in the long run, you know, the difference between gasoline infrastructure and electric infrastructure is that electricity is everywhere. Yeah. And, you know, every time, if you've ever lived near a gas station that's needed maintenance or something like that, where they end up having to shut it down for a year while they dig the tanks out and stuff that.
I have one they converted on our corner down here that's turning into condos, but I watched them it took years for them to get the tanks out.
It's like hazardous waste, basically, in the ground.
Yep.
And so, there is a side question, which is what will happen to all the gas stations? Like, there probably won't be as many gas stations eventually. But in the shorter term, what's interesting is electricity is everywhere. So what you're not going to get is an electric filling station that's just out on its own. Instead, what you're going to get is, and I saw this when I took my Tesla trip, what you get is charging in various places. And when you're on a long interstate highway, it's going to be at a place with services. So you stop and use the bathroom and have a snack or eat your lunch. And meanwhile, your car is charging. But it also is that other thing, which is like when we go to Target, our Target has like 15 level 2 chargers. And so you plug in and it's free charging for the first like hour or 2 hours or something like that. And you go in and you shop at Target and you come out and your car has more battery. And that's the difference from gas, is that electricity is, it can go everywhere. It doesn't need to just go at the gas station that is now going to be a gas station forever because they have permanently soiled the ground.
The interesting part of that as well is the, you mentioned this briefly, I think there was, the charging right now, anyways, is free in general. Like,
I mean, a lot of it is, not all of it. Okay. Like at our Whole Foods, we have fast chargers. Those are EVgo fast chargers, so they're more like what you'd find on an interstate, and not level two. They're the super fast ones, and you've got to pay. You know, you pay like you pay for gas.
Right, because
level twos are mostly, or at least the idea is, a lot of them are an inducement to plug in because you're going to be shopping or whatever.
Right, and exactly. So you're using it as kind of a, not exactly a loss leader, but you're like, hey, you know, this is a cost we're willing to pay
to get you to buy come to Target stuff. And stay here.
It's like buying popcorn at the movies, right? Like,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, so, but I think that's interesting to watch if that dynamic continues to change as more and more people are using electric cars, therefore the demand goes up.
Oh, yeah, and electricity costs money, right? So
absolutely, it's not free.
I think, I mean, our electric bill went way up when we bought the Leaf, but also we stopped going to the gas station. So,
right,
you know,
so there's a trade-off.
And
your electricity can come from, say, renewable sources as opposed to gas, whereas it's just
it's 100% fossil fuels in the gas. So, it is, and from a technical standpoint, too, that's interesting because I know that like Tesla, the way it works is basically your supercharger knows what the Tesla is, what the car is, and there's a credit card attached to the car.
Right.
And so it just charges you. My understanding is there is now a standard, and I know it's different in other countries, and that in Europe, Teslas have to come with the standard fast charge port, which is not the case in the US. It's a different port, although they have an adapter. So you can go from Tesla to something else in a Tesla, but they don't want other people using their chargers yet, which is also fascinating. I imagine they will open that up at some point and they'll just charge you more for it. And there'll be like a but the point is, there is also a new standard in the standard fast charger. I don't know if it's true of the level twos, but I think it's true of the fast chargers that is slowly rolling out. That's the same thing. You'll have a unique car ID. You will be able to pair a credit card with a unique car ID. And then when you plug in, it just knows what car it is and charges you for it. And because right now it's a, you can have an app or you can have like a, at Target, I actually have a card on my phone and my Apple Watch. I have a wallet NFC tap card that will unlock it because you do have to log in even though it's free because it's EVgo. And after 90 minutes or whatever it is, it will start charging you if you let it sit there. But eventually all that is going to go away, I think. And they're going to build out this standard, which makes sense, right? It's like, you know what car this is, unless it's a rental or something. But like, if it's my personal car, and if it's a rental, I'm sure the rental car companies will pay for it and then double that price and charge it to you because that's what they do.
Right. Yeah. Or, I mean, either that or it'll turn into something much, very much like gas, where it's like, you've got your little NFC reader,
sure.
right? And you have Apple Pay there.
It's very like that now. I mean, a lot of these kiosks, that's what it is. You have a tag. See, and again, ideally, I think I've seen this someplace. Ideally, you would just walk up and Apple Pay it. But a lot of them, what you have to do is you have to do a tag to your account on their service where you've put your credit card, which is obviously that's all going to go away, right? It's the simplest way to do it is to just let people use Apple Pay or a chip card or something and do it, or have it tied directly to their account that's attached to their car. So they'll get there. But like, again, I'm fascinated by this because eventually, like in 10, 15 years, this is all going to be like completely settled. But right now it is very much not settled. And
right,
I'm fascinated
right.
by
and
that.
And it's such a huge ground shift too, right? Because like gas stations, that model has not changed appreciably
100
in the last... Well, I mean, you know, we went from full serve to self serve, which is
true.
Probably the biggest
shift in Oregon and New Jersey.
Right. But like in my lifetime, the experience of filling up my car, the only thing that's changed is like the payment methods, right? I used to bring $20 and hand the guy $20, and now I get out and I pay with my credit card, et cetera. But like the process of pumping gas has not itself changed. So, and like the existence of fuel stations and all of that. So I think it is fascinating to see like this is a huge, huge ground shift. And I think watching this evolve and seeing how it develops and people start making this, which the other thing to keep in mind, and you know, we talk about this sometimes when we talk about you know, consumer electronics too, are replacement cycles, right? Cars, this is the big thing.
Yeah.
Gas cars, they're not going to go away anytime soon because not everybody replaces cars. No one can afford to replace a car. Like, it happens, but it is a slow process. People, you know, there are people who, I know lots of folks who drive their cars into the ground, right? They're going to drive that car for 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
we've had our minivan for like 11 years at this point.
My car is 10 years old this June, and it blows me away.
Your new car is 10 years old?
My new car is almost 10 years old. I know. And it blows my mind every time. But like, you know, that car's only got 70,000 miles on it. I'm not getting rid of it anytime soon, probably, but it's, you know.
Well, that's the thing.
A few more years.
I mean, I remember this from all the cars that were like the really bad polluters, that what ends up happening is there's this natural cycle, right? Where, some people sell their cars to get the next big thing, but other people buy those cars and use those cars.
Right, right.
And then eventually somebody, usually a government, will come in and say, we will give you money to retire your old gas car. And that is probably going to happen at some point, right?
Because gas stations will start to go out of business, you know, and there'll be fewer of them.
And it'll probably be less convenient to have a gas car. It'll probably be more expensive, right? They'll probably make gas even more expensive too. And people will be like, yeah, I got to give this up. And then the government will say, we'll give you $1,000 for that car that isn't worth $1,000. Right. And you're like, all right.
The same reason, I mean, I think this is the other end of that equation, right? Is that since EV cars are few and far between right now, they tend to be more expensive. And, you know, governments do incentivize sometimes, right? There are rebates and stuff like that you can get.
But no, they're expensive.
They're not as cheap as buying gas cars because the technology is newer.
Yeah, if you want to buy
a
Toyota Corolla,
works.
Right? Like, that's going to be way cheaper than any electric car you can get, even if it's used.
So we need to get to that point, too, where the prices, the proliferation of models makes it more competitive, the product lines get faster, the tooling, all of that gets better and drives
and
the cost down.
At that point, ideally, that infrastructure that we were talking about is kind of built up, where people know that if you live at home, you can have a home charger, but if you park on the street, there's some place you can charge either on the street, or you can charge where you drive to work, or you can charge where you go to school, or you can charge where you shop, and it all just kind of works out, and you're never going to be so far away from a place to charge that you are going to run out of juice, right? But it's going to take time as this all happens. I love it because it's new. It's new technology. This is the kind of stuff that we write about, not quite the same, but similar, and it pushes those buttons for me where it's like, it's kind of fun to see everybody trying to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah, I'd love to get an electric car too. I mean, this is what we're talking about. I would love for this car. I like my current car, and I'm going to keep driving it as long as it suits our purposes. But I have no impetus to buy another internal combustion car if I can avoid it. That seems backwards thinking at this point. So, I think the thing that keeps me the most back is just like, I would like some more competition in the market. I'd like to see some more different types of EVs. Like right now, a lot of them are focusing on things that are popular sellers, right? There's a reason that the big ones that we saw this year during the Super Bowl, it's trucks, man, right?
Trucks and crossovers,
Trucks and crossovers are what people are buying.
Mm-hmm.
And so those
in
are the
US,
things that obviously they're targeting first. And that makes sense. But I love having a smaller car, a hatchback or a station wagon that I can get around town in. And those are going to come later,
I mean,
if at all.
If your car, well, that's not entirely true. Like if your car went away tomorrow, you could get something like a Chevy Bolt.
Sure. they
that
do
is
exist.
An EV and that is in the same sort of class as your car, but there aren't that many
are
of
much
them.
More
you're
limited,
right.
Most
of the stuff being rolled out is a crossover or an SUV, and all a crossover is a short SUV. Although I would argue some of those crossovers, and I mentioned this on Slack, some of those crossovers, they don't want to call it a station wagon, but like if it's got a hatch.
Right.
It's a station wagon, folks. Like, okay, fine. It's a crossover.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing is like, you know, I can go out and buy one of a dozen different like hatchbacks or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like on the EV side, the options are just more limited.
It's
right?
True.
So
it's true.
And it'll broaden. It will. I'm convinced. But it's there are lots of internal combustion makers out there who have not even really. I mentioned Subaru just because my wife is a huge Subaru fan and her family has bought them for years. It's like, I don't think they have an EV period right now, which is a dangerous place to be.
I definitely am in the position now having had the Leaf, which is a used 2012 Leaf with no range that we use as a town car, but having driven that and having driven the Tesla for that week, I don't want to ever buy a gas car again. I like the electric cars too much. I appreciate not having to go to the gas station, and driving it is a joy. Electric motor cars are really fun to drive, and I feel more confident in them. Like driving through, we'll go to we've only done once since the pandemic hit, but before the pandemic, especially driving to San Francisco to like go see a baseball game or to go see a night at the theater kind of thing. Right, we take the Leaf. And to get there, you go up the gigantic hills in San Francisco, including one, and those streets tend to have stop signs, four-way stops. So you do a lot of stopping, which is can be terrifying, especially in a stick shift car. And I've driven it in a stick shift car. And there's one intersection that's so steep that you literally can't see what's happening in the intersection until you start rolling into it. You just see the sky. And it's so great to drive that in an electric car because the electric car doesn't care. It doesn't even the little Leaf. It's just it doesn't care.
I will be very sad to lose my stick shift. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
Have been rumors of them making electric cars with stick shift. I think there's a Mustang that had one. And I'm like, okay, that's weird. I would drive it just to try it out, but I don't think it would probably make a lot of sense.
My second topic for you is you have an iMac.
I do.
You use your iMac.
I do. I'm using it right now.
At the end of the day, do you put it to sleep or do you shut it down?
Jason, I never shut it down.
Whoa.
I know you're a shutdown person.
I am a shutter downer, man.
I feel like I've been bit by this on occasion because I definitely hit that point where it's like, how long has this Mac been running? And it starts to get, sometimes things get a little funky. Sometimes stuff gets a little buggy. Mm-hmm. I was talking to
and then you
got to
restart.
I was talking to our pal Lex Friedman the other day because talking with him and seeing your post about the new Fantastical update made me think I should give Fantastical another try. And I ended up with all this, like, I was telling him, I was like, oh, I've got like this badge on my calendar that won't go away even though I don't have any events. I'm like, what is going on? He's like, that doesn't happen. You should try restarting.
Restart.
So I killed the dock and restarted that. I was like, oh, okay, it went away now. Mm-hmm. But it was like lots of little weirdness was happening. And I think to myself, I was yelling at my computer yesterday, I need a new Mac.
So I this is my hot take, because this came up because Craig Hockenberry was talking about how his monitor kind of stays on and blinks all night. And I said, I have a power strip that my iMac is plugged into. And so when I shut down, it turns off all the other items on the power strip. It's very clever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he says, I think because when you put an Apple Silicon Mac to sleep, it doesn't drop the power consumption enough to trigger something like that. And I said, oh, I shut down my computer and it's an Intel iMac Pro. So I can't help you here. And somebody wrote on Twitter and said he could imagine John Syracuse saying, Apple engineers have painstakingly perfected the sleep feature over many years, yet you choose not to use it. And I decided to go with the hot take, which is when I go to sleep, USB devices stay powered on, which is bad. Like my expensive USB audio interface, the lights stay on, it's still getting input from my microphone. I'm like, I don't want it to stay on all night, like 24 hours a day. I just don't want that. And then other devices that are plugged in also are powered because there's pass-through power. And, you know, rightly or wrongly, well, that's a thing that happens. And I don't like it. I don't like having the microphone on all night. That's weird. But second is, it just means that things get wonky and I have to restart at some point during the day. Maybe not every day, but it needs to happen. Shutting down the Mac, I get a clean slate every day when I start up. It doesn't take that long to start up. I walk in and I press the button and I turn on the lights and I sit down and my Mac is on and it's just, it's not
let me,
a, all a right, problem.
Let me do a little thought exercise with you here. You also have a laptop. Do you shut that down?
I don't, because sleep is, that was my hot take part, is sleep is for laptops, people, not desktop computers. But, that was my big punchline of my hot take was sleep is for laptops.
I mean, the main difference there, I would think, I mean, is the, you know, accessories and peripherals connected.
Yeah, things get weird when you put something, actually, like the Stream Deck, I believe, tells you, like, don't put it to sleep unless it's directly connected to the computer because it loses its connection and stuff. Like, peripherals get weird when you put things to sleep. On a desktop, my MacBook Air doesn't have peripherals to speak of, right? I have had that happen, actually, when I visit my mom and I've got my my microphone, my USB microphone, and I close the laptop and the microphone stays on, and I'm like, no, I don't like this, and I have to unplug it. That's my take on it is like people do what they want. You can put your Mac to sleep and all that. It's just, I've decided since I've had this iMac that it also, I think psychologically it feels good when I shut down. It's like the end of the day. If I think of something else I want to do, I'm not going to do it because I already shut down.
It doesn't work for me because, as you well know, I record podcasts in the evening frequently, sometimes late at night. So I could shut down all the way at the end of the day. Like, it would have to be like...
Yeah, I do it after. If I've got a podcast at night, I wait until the podcast is over and then I shut down. Yeah. And it's the last step. We're done for the day.
I like being able to just wake it up in the morning and it's instantaneous. That's where I'm at.
I also had many years where using a laptop, especially attached occasionally to external devices, including a monitor, where sleep... I also have it out for sleep in the sense that I still remember sleep being so...
It was bad.
like you press the external keyboard and it's like nothing happens. And you're like, what are you doing? And I still don't like that wake from sleep experience on desktop. It really freaks me out. So I fortunately, everybody gets to do what they want. But I'm curious. I suspect I am in a real minority in terms of doing this. But
I think that's probably true.
But I love it. Like I think it's better for everyone that computer is completely off, not drawing any power, and that it starts fresh every day. And I would wager that my stability during the day on average is better than somebody who doesn't, because the people who put it to sleep probably have to do restarts every now and then to clear it out, and I don't.
Here's the schematic I've been building in my head. I think shutting down your computer every night, lawful good. I think putting your computer to sleep every night, maybe chaotic good.
No. Chaotic good is putting your computer to sleep whenever you walk away from it or something like that. Because you gotta work in auto sleep. Okay, maybe you're going mad.
Well, that's what I was saying. It was like, okay, true neutral to me is like having the shutdown startup schedule. Like in your where is it, energy saver, whatever, you can it's right, it's weird. Oh. It's weird. And it's like, why would you do that?
I feel like maybe that's lawful good.
Or maybe that's like lawful evil. I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if there's enough.
We could workshop this. We could between like goes to sleep after a delay,
and
automatic shutdown and startup, and manual shutdown and startup, and
display like, start. I feel like disk sleep.
I feel like chaotic evil is something like
pulls the power cord out of the back of the computer.
Well, maybe that's true. I'm just thinking like, how do you align somebody who shuts down their computer when they go to lunch, right? Like, who are you? What are you doing?
Ooh, neutral evil? I don't know. Yeah, there's some options. Right, there we go. We'll workshop that. We'll get some input. Everything can be reduced to a 3x3 gig, Jason, eventually.
Eventually, everything will be, including electric car charging. Oh!
Hey, we're back around.
I brought it back around. Who's gonna be on the podcast next week, Dan?
I don't know. I've been thinking about it. I may try to find someone. We'll see. I'm gonna try to find a guest.
I am in Hawaii, so... I'll tell you how to post the podcast, but I'm not going to help. So.
The rest of it, yes, that's fine.
Calendar must be appeased. But other than that, for 2 weeks, for me, but not for you. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.